Don't get fooled by cut-rate networks. Verizon is America's only number one network according to Root Metrics. Join today and get up to $650 when you trade in your phone to cover your cost to switch. Verizon, better matters. New smartphone device payment purchase and port-in required. Get up to $650 prepaid card for installment plan balance less trade-in value after $350 prepaid card for early termination fees less trade-in value. Trade-in must be in good working and cosmetic condition and be worth more than $0. Line must remain active for 6 months, subject to VZW agreements, calling plan, and credit approval. Rankings based on 2016 first half Root Metrics U.S. National Root Score report of 4 mobile networks. Results may vary. Visit rootmetrics.com.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Welcome to the Along Came a Writer Network. Opinions expressed in our shows do not necessarily reflect those of the network.
Welcome to Chat Noir, Mystery and Suspense. It is my pleasure to interview author Patricia Bradley today, and I'm looking forward to chatting with her. She is a romantic suspense writer living in the Deep South. Her short stories have been published in Woman's World, and she is I read this off her website, releasing her fourth book, but she has more than that. We'll talk about that. Gone Without a Trace was book three in the Logan Point series, and she was releasing her fourth. It's set in Memphis and the surrounding area, and she has won several awards, the 2008 Maggie Inspirational category, first place in 2012 Touched by Love and Daphne du Maurier contest, and she finaled in the 2012 Genesis and bronzed in the Frasier. And she's written straight romances, just straight up romances, and she also speaks as an abstinence healthy relationship speaker, and has spoken to many students and adults. And when she's not doing all that, she likes to throw mud on a wheel and try to make something beautiful. And we're going to talk about that too. Well, welcome to the show, Patricia Bradley.
Thank you. I'm really looking forward to this.
Oh, I am too. I am too. Well, let's start off. I want to ask, and I ask this of every author, how did you get started in this crazy merry-go-round of fun?
Oh, me. Well, when I turned 35, I couldn't sleep at night. And one night as I was staring at the ceiling, this man popped into my mind, and he was standing at a window, and in the background I could see smokestacks, and he turned and looked at me and he said, "This wasn't the way my life was supposed to turn out." And I thought, "Oh, wow."
Ooh.
And yeah, that's the first time that had ever happened to me. And
wow.
I thought, I wonder, and then the next few nights he would come back and he would tell me stories. And it started off when he was a young man, and he was poor. And he was
were you actually seeing him, or were you imagining this?
It became an imagination. It was in my imagination.
Wow!
But it was so real. And I thought, I wonder if I could write it. And at that time, a lot of people want to be a writer from the time start reading, but I was just always a reader. I love reading. I was reading mm-hmm. before I went to school. I read Exodus by Leon Uris when I was in the 10th grade, and my 10th grade English teacher didn't believe me.
But oh, wow.
I loved reading. And
yes.
I never thought of, I mean, I thought, well, I could write if I, maybe it might have crossed my mind, but not really. But when this man and then his family starts living in my head, I think, well, I wonder if I could write their stories. No, back then, okay, wouldn't now, go away when I started writing.
I have to explain something to our listeners. Okay, this is not at all odd for writers because our characters get into our heads and you almost right. think of them as real people, you know, and you imagine, oh, my character would not do that. Yeah, there is no way she'd do that, you know. And yeah, they are sort of, they're kind of like friends, your imaginary friends.
They are.
But yeah, I mean, that's how deep we go into this, okay? So, and it's not weird.
Right.
At least we don't think so.
No.
Okay.
No,
so you started with that. And when were you first published?
I picked up a Writer's Digest, and there were some writing books in there, and I sent off for that. And I had an idea for a short story, and it was called The Snow Leopard. And there was, this was back in 1985, I believe, or 1980, and even, I mean, it was way back. And I wrote this story. I knew I wanted to send it to Woman's World, and they asked for 2,500 words, and I sent 4,000. That's how green I was. But Nancy McCarthy, yeah, I know. It was only by the grace of God that it did not come back by return mail. But Nancy McCarthy liked the story, and she bought it and cut it to the word, at that time, the word count was like 2,000 or 2,500. I can't remember. I know I was way, way over. And it was published. And the name, then she kept the name of it, The Snow Leopard. And I wrote two more stories. One for the next story, there was a new editor. And this time, the second time I did much better. I only sent 2,500 words for an 1,800 word story, because by this time they're getting shorter and shorter. And
do you think
so,
it's better to be over or under? Is it better to be have too much?
It's better to be right on the mark. I promise.
Okay.
Because it was. I mean, to me, it's a God thing that it happened. But the thing with that one is, I was able to. The new editor made me cut it. And I learned so much from that. So, and then the third one I sent was right on the mark. It was 1,500 words.
So you got a hold of it. But you got the hang of it.
Yeah. Right. And so I sent the right amount. And then they changed the format to, it's one of those, you solve it. And it's 750 words. And that's just a little bit shorter than I want to write.
Yeah.
So I haven't submitted any more short stories, but it takes almost as long to write something short. I have to do almost as much research.
It does. So, yeah.
So I go ahead and invest in the novels.
So what
really
was that?
You the time.
So you just mailed those in? Is that, I mean, and boom,
I did.
That was it. Got it.
I mailed them in. Of course, it takes a little bit longer than that, The second and third one only took about 6 weeks before I heard back. I think it was a couple of months on the first book. And I mean, I was just shocked when I saw, I still have the letter.
Were you elated when you got it? Were you just, what was that moment?
I couldn't believe it. It was just surreal. I thought, wow. Because I never dreamed. Somehow, down deep, I knew that they would sell my book, that I was going to be published. I don't know why I knew, but somehow I knew that I had good stories. I don't mean that in a bragging sort of way. I just knew there was just something in my psyche or in my brain or in my heart that just told me that this is good. Because I, as much
well,
as
you
I
read enough.
Reading,
yeah.
Right. I knew.
You read enough to know.
Right. And the ideas were a little bit different. The very last one is what I call a biter bit story, where the biter gets bit, and it's called Blood Kin. And it is on my, I think it's on my Facebook page, or you may have to have a link to it but because I think I make it available to my newsletter, the people who get my sign up for my newsletter.
And oh, we'll hear that, the, listeners.
Yes, and this is where the premise of it is this nephew's trying to kill his uncle by putting arsenic in his cocoa and his food, and I'm not going to spoil the ending, but it's got quite a neat trick. Twist to it.
Well, that's not only a crime, it's a crime against chocolate as well.
Right.
Destroying chocolate. But but you started off like from the magazine. Did you go straight into writing sweet romances for Harlequin?
No.
Because I asked.
No.
What happened?
Harlequin, the very, I wrote off and on. Life happens, you know, and so in my spare time I was writing. And in 1997, my husband died, and I thought that I would just take a few years. He had been quite ill, and I thought I would take a couple years, and see if I could not get a book published. I had been working on a book forever, and so that's what I did, and then all of a sudden, I find myself working in the abstinence program. Yeah, you know, I'm thinking, well, Lord, wasn't this what you wanted me to do, to take time off and focus on the writing? But evidently it wasn't, because I was drawn.
Well, that's a good segue. That's a segue, because that was another question I was going to ask you later. But you might as well talk about it now, and we'll go back to your books after this. So you started that program.
Right. Well, it was actually a friend of mine was working on a grant. Well, actually, I didn't even know her at the time. I was at church, and I was telling someone that I would love to talk to the kids about abstinence and making healthy choices. And someone at church gave me Carolyn Gowan's name and didn't even give me her number. I went home and looked it up, and it was long distance because the way the county ran. And anyway, I called her and I said, I told her I'd like to help her I'd like to volunteer for her and work in her abstinence program. And she said, well, are you a teacher? And I said, no. She said, are you a nurse? And I said, no. And she said, how do you think you could help me? And I said, I don't know, but I feel like God told me to call you. And she said, that's enough. Let's meet tomorrow. And we did. And I began volunteering on her program. And then she was working on a grant with the Boonville School District, which is in our area. And there was an opening, actually got a little more funding, and she was able to put me on the grant. And a couple of years later, we wrote for the big federal grant, which was almost over $500,000. And before we retired, we were writing. She wrote the grant. I did the grunt work, and for almost $1 million. And we were doing abstinence and healthy relationships all over Mississippi, West Tennessee, and Northwest Alabama. So
wow.
We traveled quite a bit. We went to Washington, to Boston, to just all over.
That's amazing.
It was fascinating. It was. And to talk to the kids, it was just to try it, just what they believe and what they think and the choices that they're making right now, it just breaks your heart. And
do you have any stories, personal stories you could share, like from some of the feedback from the kids? Without using names.
We usually started out in the sixth and seventh grade talking to the kids about abstinence. And we usually went to the same schools each year. And so, but we also did from 6 through 12. So as the kids came on up, they were seeing that what we had told them was true. But one little girl in particular told me that I was talking, and I could see that she was very upset. This was in the seventh grade. This is a different story than when I started. She was in the seventh grade, and she had had a baby over the summer, and she was 14. Mm-hmm. And She had to come to the class, and she was upset and angry because she thought we would be judgmental. And
right.
she sat in the back of the room with her arms crossed. And as she listened, though, but she listened. And as she listened, she heard, because I was a teenage unwed mother, too. And that's why I wanted to do the abstinence program, because I wanted the kids to know that the choices they make at that age will follow them the rest of their life, good or bad.
Yes.
And so anyway, by the end of the class, she had moved up and was active. By the end of the, we were there for 3 days. She was, at the last day, she said, I'd like to talk to my classmates. And she told them, she said, for whatever they do, that to think about it, because it was homecoming week. She said, this is homecoming week. I can't go because I don't have anyone to keep my baby. And I have to go straight home. 14-year-old kid. And then plus she had a new worry because the boy had turned 18 and he was now responsible to pay child support. So he was suing for custody of the child.
Oh, and, my goodness.
Yeah, and she said nobody, and I reinforced it. No 14-year-old needs that kind of pressure, but
right.
her story did more good than my talking for 3 days.
Wow, that's
the kids
great.
Listen. Yeah,
that's great. Well, thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
And I want to get back to your books because we're halfway through already. We're halfway through the interview.
Already. Yeah.
So okay, on your website, I'm getting back to this. You had 4 books so far, according to your site, but your website designer is not, can't move as fast as you write, I think. That's my theory.
Evidently. Yeah.
Because
well,
you
I
had,
don't know what happened. Yeah.
Well, you have Justice Delayed.
That's the one that will Shadows. Come out in January.
And that's is that a standalone or is that the first of a new series?
It's the first. They're not actually, I think it's the first of the Memphis Cold Case novels. They're not really going to be a series. And that way we can actually do, I'm hoping that means that we can do more than 4. Because can see a cold case, I can see Memphis Cold Case crimes going indefinitely with the cold case team. The very first book I wrote was Shadows of the Past. It was the
and
Maggie
that's
Winter
the Logan and, Point. That's Logan
right,
Point
Logan
series,
Point.
Right?
Right.
Book
and
1.
It, Logan
okay.
Point, right. Logan Point is set right outside of Memphis. I actually moved northeast Mississippi, 80 miles west, and didn't tell anybody. And moved to Tennessee River over there. But anyway, I never called the name of the river, but and it I grew up in Memphis, so I'm very familiar with different areas of Memphis.
You're
and,
writing what you know. You're right.
Right. And I enjoy it's been a long time since I lived there, but it comes back. But I wrote Shadows of the Past. I worked on that book for 5 or 6 years before it was good enough for it to be published. And Revell offered a 3-book contract. And after the first book came out and did well, they offered a 4th book in that series. And
so you're, can I just tell your book, it was in the Logan Point series, you had Shadows of the Past, book 1, A Promise to Protect, book 2, Gone Without a Trace, book 3, and Silence in the Dark, book 4 in the Logan Point series.
Right.
Okay.
That's right. And that book, it came out in May. That's 2 books ago, actually, because I have finished 2 books since then. But right after the week that Shadows of the Past debuted, came out, released, Harlequin made an offer for Matthew's Choice for me to I had written it. I had written it and sent it to him probably 2 years before, and they finally they were at heartwarming. There were a lot of changes and things, but that week they made an offer and sent revisions before I even signed the contract, and it was a 200 and that was really sweet. But it was a 200 and I think 89 page manuscript. And I did not know how to write romance. I had never, romance, if you'll look at my romantic suspense books, they're heavier on suspense than they are romance.
Yes.
I can kill them, but it's very hard for me to get them together.
You know what? That's such a great, I wish that was your tagline. I can kill them, but I can't get them together.
Right. But when Victoria Curran was the editor, and she sent me 269 comments on that 289 page manuscript. So I learned how to write
almost a comment for every word. That's cool.
Right. Now, some of them were things that I actually did right, but not
That's
many.
Good.
But I learned, well, and then they brought another, and they actually want some more, but I haven't had time to write another heartwarming just yet.
Well, so how long does it take for you to write a book? How much time do you take? Because I know you took you 6 years for that first one to right. get it right. And I want the listeners to understand that, because, you know, some people think you should just churn things out and not deliberate over what you've written and edit and re-edit, you know. So what's your thought on that?
I wish I had a year, but I don't. There's usually 9 months between books, and I usually waste 3 months. Life happens, or catching up from getting the last deadline.
Recovering.
Recovering yeah. and getting things done. And the shortest I have ever written a book in was 4.5 months. And the longest was, I mean, not the longest, but it would be the 5 year. But I have a book due May 1st, and I will start on it definitely by December 1st. And so I won't mm-hmm. be so pushed. But when I'm writing, I write 2,000 words a day, 10,000 words a week for the first half. And then the last half is 3,000 words a day and 15,000 a week.
That sounds reasonable. You know, it does sound reasonable, because, you know, 2,000 words a day is good. You can write a good 2,000 words a day.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, you have to push yourself, but sometimes
yeah.
sometimes it's easy, but sometimes
yeah.
it's like pulling teeth.
Yeah, it doesn't flow very well. But
no.
Let's see. We're down to the minutes are ticking away, and I want to do a fun lightning round at the end. Okay. No, this is good. All right. Is there a genre you would secretly like to write in but are terrified to do so?
Romance, probably. I'm not. I don't think
you're thinking. I like that. Okay. Now, you talked about throwing mud on a wheel. Okay.
Right.
So you do pottery. Tell me, how did that start?
Well, I needed a career for a character, and I had an opportunity to take a 3-day class, and the instructor said that I definitely wasn't his best student, but I was his most determined. So, and then I took lessons from a lady from South Africa for about 6 months or 9 months, and she taught me why you do things, and I actually used the potter's wheel in the abstinence program to show how you reclaim yourself. You know, I would mess up a pot and ask them, what should I do with the clay? And they'd say, throw it away. I said, no, this stuff costs money. Just like you don't throw yourself away. I'm going to take this
right.
and rework it and build the rest of my, I'm going to build another pot on it. I'm going to make something beautiful. And at the end, I would have 3 vases, and they could never tell which vase was from reclaimed clay and which was from.
Oh, that's so sweet, because we're jars
yeah.
of clay. We are God's jars of clay.
Right.
And,
so, and it really worked well.
Now, for listeners, I want to direct them to your social media. You know, you on your blog, on your website in particular, and you have your blog. And you have a lot of fun mystery lists, you know, questions people can answer. And do they win prizes
mystery
for that
questions.
Or do they just?
They,
okay, yeah. Like,
a lot of times,
here's.
Yeah, yeah. A, lot of, A lot of times I give an Amazon gift card, like a $5 one or a $10 one.
Okay.
And a lot of times I give one of my books. And then a lot of times it's just, they like trying to beat me because one of them is true and the other three are false.
Put down an example. A woman was caught trying to smuggle a pound of meth across the border. Where did she try to hide it? Number one, in a stuffed weenie dog. Number two, in a fake baby bottle. Number three, in two burritos. And number four, she used the meth as padding. And the answer was number three, but she didn't fool anyone with that.
Yeah.
So I thought that was great.
I found those online. And they had an actual picture of the burritos.
Oh my goodness. So if people want to answer these fun questions and maybe win a little bitty prize, go to Patricia's website, which is www.patriciabradley.com. And she's also on Facebook and she's also on Twitter and she's also on Pinterest as well. So you can find her in all those places.
And it can be www.ptbradley.com. Either one of those will get it.
Okay. All right. That's awesome. And then we are ready for the lightning round.
Uh-oh.
I want to ask you some questions.
Okay.
Well, they're fun questions. You know, you like fun questions. So here we go.
I do.
Okay. Who's more gothic, the Addams Family or the Munsters?
Oh, the Munsters.
I think it's a toss up for me, but you know, in terms of they both have a gothic style home, you know, so I don't know which one would be scarier if they answered the door. Of course, Lurch would answer. Since this show is going to air in December, what's the weirdest Christmas invention? Elf on the Shelf or Frosty the Snowman?
Elf's on the Shelf.
I think there's something sinister about him.
Does warm and cuddly things to me, but Elf on a Shelf does not.
Well, Frosty still looks kind of creepy if you think about it too. I don't know. Yeah. It's a toss up, you know. Okay. Worst punishment growing up, washing your mouth out with soap or being forced to eat a slice of your aunt's fruitcake.
Washing my mouth out with soap because I love fruitcake. Now, my worst punishment was having to go get the switch for the spanking.
Oh, yes, to go actually cut the switch that would be used.
Right.
Yes. Okay, here's another question. What's scarier, coming face to face with a Sasquatch or a clown?
Clown.
Yeah, for me too. Even before all this clown kind of garbage that's happening, I've always hated clowns, and I have a whole Pinterest board, you know, that's called "I Hate Clowns" with all the scary pictures of clowns on there. Let's see. Let's do one more question. What's more your style, The Ghost in Mr. Chicken or Invasion of the Body Snatchers? And we're talking about film. Scary movies.
Ghost and Mr. Chicken. I love
that's Don my Knotts. Favorite. I know Don mm-hmm. Knotts, that and that movie in particular was so funny.
It was.
And just Now, do you have a favorite suspense movie? Well, maybe less than that.
Wait, I missed you. What you said we, I didn't catch that question.
Okay. What's your favorite suspense movie film?
Psycho. I'm dating
Psycho,
myself,
yes.
But
no.
To me, there will never be another one as terrifying as. I mean, that for weeks, I wouldn't get in a shower at all.
Yes, it was. It's still, and you know, of course, Alfred Hitchcock was the master of suspense. So,
he was.
What suspense writer couldn't love Hitchcock films? You just about have to.
He was good. Rear Window.
Yes.
That
and the birds.
And it was. Mm-hmm. The birds. Yes.
Mm-hmm. All those.
He was good.
Okay, now we're almost out of time, and I just want to thank you for being on the show. And it always goes so quickly. I just can't believe how fast 30 minutes can go. But I've had a delightful time talking to you and getting to know you. And please come back on the show when your new books come out, because we still have more to explore.
I would love to. Write suspense to your introduction theme.
Oh, that's awesome. I did that theme myself. And thank you so much. Thank you so much, Patricia. Have a great rest of the day.
Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
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 Don't get fooled by cut-rate networks. Verizon is America's only number one network according to Root Metrics. Join today and get up to $650 when you trade in your phone to cover your cost to switch. Verizon, better matters. New smartphone device payment purchase and port-in required. Get up to $650 prepaid card for installment plan balance less trade-in value. Up to $350 prepaid card for early termination fees less trade-in value. Trade-in must be in good working and cosmetic condition and be worth more than $0. Line must remain active for 6 months, subject to VZW agreements, calling plan, and credit approval. Rankings based on 2016 first half Root Metrics U.S. National Root Score report of 4 mobile networks. Results may vary. Visit rootmetrics.com.
At Wendy's,
this just in. Wendy's new Swiss Junior Bacon Cheeseburger is now an option with the 4 for $4. Let's go live to Switzerland. You can hear the ceremonial Swiss Alpine horns welcoming the new Swiss Junior Bacon Cheeseburger. Now an officer from the Swiss Army is using his knife to cut into a ceremonial block of cheese. There you have it, the deliciously different Swiss Junior Bacon Cheeseburger. Now available for a limited time with 4 nuggets, fries, and a Coke for just $4. Stay neutral, Switzerland.
At participating Wendy's for a limited time, meal includes small fries and a drink, not valid in Alaska, Hawaii, or Switzerland.